bring them out, bring them out, bring them out, bring them out. It's hard to yell when the bat rails in your mouth.
Come on.
Bring them out, bring them out.
Welcome back. It's The Drive with Matthew, Jimmy, and Chuck on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Brought to you by Dan Cummins in Pearson, Georgetown. It's Hip Hop Hump Day.
Hump Day.
And we are live at Critter Control and Truly Nolan.
Yes, we are.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we are. And I'm sure everybody knows how I feel about Hump Day.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows. I'm sure. I just got to say this. We are so excited. We have been waiting for this. We had a great interview with Dr. John, as we call him, John Wong, who has written a book. Alan Cutler has written a book along with Dr. John. And we have been waiting to talk to Alan Cutler. And we are at Critter Control and Truly Nolan. And I'm just going to say it. Sean said it first.
If ever there was a critter in need of controlling,
it's Alan
it's
Cutler.
Alan Cutler.
Yes, I think that's the way to start to talk about this incredible book, Cut to the Chase. Well, hello, Alan Cutler.
Well, hello, but I'm interested in you liking Hump Day.
Matthew Lawrence is...
Let me say, Matthew, see, you're young compared to me. When you get to be as old as I am, every day is Saturday. I don't know what Hump Day is. I mean...
Okay, yeah, but this would take too long.
Matthew likes it because we play hip-hop on Hump Day, and he is the king of Lexington hip-hop.
Oh, I hate it, Alan. I absolutely hate it.
That's pretty funny. Hey, Sean, if you're doing that, all three hairs that are left on his head probably fell out.
Yikes. All right. I said to Sean and Jimmy, we were talking before we went on the air, I said, there is so much here because of you, Alan, everything you've done in this community and how long you've been here and everything, and now this book, that it's almost impossible to find a place to start. But here's where I want to start, before the actual book. I want to know if what you've been doing recently... we know this book took almost 2 years to write, but are you calling us from a coffee plantation in Costa Rica, or what are you doing?
I'm in Lexington.
Ah, okay.
We stayed in the same house for 30 years.
Wow.
And, you know, being empty nesters and kids moved out, we downsized, but we're still in Lexington. Look, Lexington is home. If you would have told me 30 years ago that I would say Lexington is home, I would have said you got rocks in your head. But we love Lexington. Plus, our grandkids are here. We ain't going nowhere. Lexington has been great to us. Really. I mean, it's just one of those things. Look, all of us in life have things that happen to us. You're going, I didn't realize it would happen like this. We love Lexington. It's just funny how it worked out.
Yeah. So it's awesome that you're still here. I want to know where... did you think about writing a book, like, for the last 15 years?
No.
I know people must have said to you, you got to write a book, Alan.
No, I didn't get much of that at all. The first time I really got it, there was a twinkle in the back of my head when I decided to retire, but very minor. Until then, no. But all the credit goes to Doc. I call him Doc, Dr. John Wall.
Yeah.
He gets all the credit. He bugged me. He really bugged me. And he was insistent on it. Now, he kept on bugging me. What he didn't know, we kept it quiet. I decided to retire, and we kept it quiet for months and months, which in this business is like impossible.
Yeah.
And when I announced it in front of the whole TV station, shocked everybody that I was going to retire, literally dropped the mic. I was getting honored like everybody does after a certain number of years. And I said, by the way, Derby Day is going to be a little more emotional. I quit. Both of two people. Now, you think anybody cheered? No. Nobody cheered. Nobody booed. Nobody threw anything. It was dead silence for probably 5-6 seconds. But, you know, Matthew, you were on stage. You get it. There were lights on me. It seemed like an eternity. And then one person stood up and clapped. And then everybody clapped because they were so happy I was leaving. And the funny part is, before the dinner was over, it was already on Twitter. Gee, surprise, surprise that I'm retiring.
Yeah,
well,
shock.
As I did that, yeah, shock, you're right. The, Doc put the full press on. And I said, no, I don't want to do this. Nobody will read it. And one day I said, you know, let's go have a cup of coffee. And so it began.
Wow. How do I ask this question? How do you go about, right? I mean, your career, look, all of our listeners have known you for a long, long time, even if they didn't personally know you. How do you go about even beginning to put some shape to a book? And from what Doc said, this book is like 7,000 pages. It's like the World Book Encyclopedia, apparently.
No, it's only 6,000 pages.
Yeah, okay. That's not bad. But how do you go about even starting the process? I guess you just start from when you first got here and take it through.
No, that's not what I did, because actually the first 6 chapters about from my childhood on.
Right.
Here's what I did. Part of it, I really trusted myself, and part of it, I was so clueless, it's not even funny. So picture an artist, not that I'm an artist, picture an artist starts on an empty canvas, and I just started throwing stuff against the wall. So once I decided to do it, I had these long lists I would make up of just things that popped in my head. And I didn't want to record anything until I had a bunch. The other thing that helped me is, and I didn't do this for that reason, I had notes that went back from the 1980s. I had over 40 pages of notes. And some of the pages literally had turned like that yellow kind of color when it's been around too long. And there were some really good things on that stuff, and there were some really bad things on that stuff. And that helped me. But this is what I did. I ad-libbed the book, literally, on my kitchen table. And then the work began. So what I did was, if I have an older brother in the business, it's Dick Coops Weiss, who spent a year here doing a book on Patino. He just finished his fourth book with some guy named Dick Vitale. You know, I don't know if he's got 17 or 18 books out. He's
one of my favorite people in the world, Hoops Weiss.
Oh, I love Hoops. I mean, literally, he is my brother. So I called him up and I said, Hoops, not how do I succeed? Hoops, how do I not fail? And he said, quote, big boy, if the book doesn't sound like you, you're going to fail miserably. Huh. That's exactly what he said. Not fail, but fail miserably. So I said, what do we do? He said, record it. He said, that's what Vitale does. And I didn't know that.
Wow.
So I insisted when I said, Doc, you can do the book with me, and we're partners. This is not my book. This is our book. He deserves so much credit. It's off the charts. He got to the point pretty quickly. Look, his example is better than mine. You can listen to a Cal press conference, and you don't know that his grammar isn't perfect. Well, my grammar is far from perfect. But when I speak, I get away with it. So does Cal. So Doc would say he'd look at Cal's transcripts and he'd go, oh, my gosh, how do I fix this? Well, you can't, of course, but you know what I'm saying? There's some lack of grammar in there. Well, there's a lot of lack of grammar in me. So he would record, and he had to kind of fix my grammar, but he had to make sure it sounded like me. And I'm sure he's had nightmares because he's got my voice in his head. And the compliment that we're receiving is, the book sounds like me. That was the most important thing. So what I did was, we started throwing stuff against the wall from different eras. I would have a list, and he came to my house 7 o'clock most times, and then he just basically begged for 7:30. You know what? I don't even know how many times. He can tell you, because he aged about 20 years in the process, and I've been talking to his phone. And then the real work began, because I drove him out of his mind. We both checked up so many little stats and little things, and I drove him crazy. But in the end, he said it was worthwhile, because this is not a book about stats. It's about, this is a people book.
Right.
Like, if I'm talking about Melvin Turpin, it's about people. And where I was when Mary Jo called me that he killed himself, and I'm crying in the Salt Lake airport. And the last time I saw him, when he's honking his horn like crazy at me, and I know it's him, I'm going, who is this idiot honking their horn? And it's Melvin in a tiny beat-up car. He's over 400 pounds. I'm on Richmond Road. We pull to the side. He literally gives me a bear hug and picks me up, and he looked awful. And we talked on the side of Richmond Road for about a half hour that day, the last time I saw him. Mm. And what happened to him? Melvin was one of the kindest. He was a gentle giant and a good man, and none of this should have happened to him. I blame the NBA for what happened to him. It's in the book.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too much of a tangent because you're tight on time. But the whole point is the book is about stories. My Steinbrenner story. Steinbrenner used to come to Lexington to buy horses, and I would get tipped off. And I've sat with Steinbrenner. Some of the goofy things that happened. I'm in Brian Cashman's office. You know, Brian played second base for Lexington Catholic. And yep. with my son and his two brothers, and the stories he told me in his office, he offered me one of his World Series rings, a real one. I wouldn't take it. I mean, the stuff
what?
About Cal.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Wait, hold it. He offered you one of his World Series rings, and you wouldn't take it?
I would not take it.
Oh, you're an idiot, Alan. I mean, seriously, I hate to put it that way, but really?
Actually, there's a chapter in the book that says I'm an idiot. That's the truth. You can't take that.
I know.
Seriously, it's too much. In fact, what's funny is, and I'll just share this with you, he had always told me if I ever come to New York, whatever I want. Okay, we're sitting around a kitchen table, and it's kind of lightly raining, and we weren't going to the beach, and my brother's kids are huge Yankee fans. My son could care less either way. He's hanging out with his cousins. That's all he cares about. So I just said, you guys want to go to Yankee game? Can you get tickets? I called Cashman's office. The secretary says, you know, I said the whole thing. I'm from Lexington. Brian always told me to call. I'm sure you get calls like this. He said, anytime I need a ticket, go ahead. She said, let me put you on hold. She comes back about 3 minutes later. She goes, I don't know who you are, but Brian said, not only to take care of you, but if you have time, he wants to see you in his office. I said, but I'm going to have my son and my brother's kids. No, please bring them in. Fine.
Oh.
We get off the elevator, and you would think that his office would be this humongous spatial palace with all these trophies and the bats and in this and in that and the other and the sun is inches. He's right off the elevator on the right side, about three doors down. He's in a tiny cubby hole. There's one thing on the wall that's like one lineup. I walk in and my mouth is open. He gives me a big hello and he says, yeah, I've seen that look before. I went, Brian, he goes, let me explain. Steinbrenner's down the hall. Said, and the office between his and the general manager, it's open. He said, so this way, if he wants me, he's got to walk down the hall.
Oh, beautiful.
You have no idea how much less stress there is. That's just one of the stories in there, and it's a couple other Cashman stories that are actually even better. But, I mean, you walk into this, it's cubbyhole. Matter of fact, in the office I have at home, okay, it's a house. It's nothing, you know, we have a nice little house, okay?
Yeah.
I have an office. It's bigger than his office. That's the truth. And I had the dumbest look on my face. You would too. And he says, yeah, I've seen that look before. And he was open about Steinbrenner and the Yankees and his job. It's in the book. It's really good. And
well,
crazy stuff with Steinbrenner. But the whole point is, I have this pet peeve. Is everybody wants to know about Billy Gillespie. There's a ton of Billy Gillespie in there. The whole story about how I almost got fired and what happened behind the scenes. It's a crazy story. And people will gravitate to that. But my whole point is that Cashman thing, and I'm saying this because I know you guys like baseball, the Cashman thing isn't even a top 50 story. There are so many great stories in this book.
Amazing.
You know, growing up playing basketball with Billy Crystal. True story.
Yep.
You know, so it's not Gillespie. It's my life. I guess.
Right. Well, you something that you said that I thought is really telling about this book, it's called Cut to the Chase. Throughout my career, I never worked for a TV station. I worked for you, the True Blue Fan. TV paid me, but I was always delivering for those that watched or listened on the radio. And that's why you're so great at telling stories, because you weren't Alan Cutler, the guy on TV or the guy on the radio or any of that. You were the fan, whoever that fan was. I would have done the same thing. Anybody would have. If they were in a position to chase Billy Gillespie down the hall and yell at him or ask him a question, you were doing what everybody wanted to do. And that's what's so great about this book and why you're so good at what you did.
And he was doing it backwards and in cowboy boots.
Yeah, that too.
Well, the cowboy boots was really stupid. That was really stupid. You know where I learned how to do exactly what that was, by the way? That I did it for the people watching, not for the station? Red Barber. If you read my introduction, how the Yankee announcers, when I was a child, the Yankee announcers and their different personalities set my personality with knowing, giving me permission to do stuff. Red Barber didn't listen to the Yankees. Red Barber didn't give a blank what the Yankees thought, and they couldn't stand it. But Red Barber is really good. And Phil Rizzuto was this goofy guy, great player, obviously, but he was this goofy guy like your uncle. Well, I'm naturally a goofy guy. This is not an act. It's just who I am. And then Mel Allen was the voice of you-know-what, which I can't do. But
yeah,
there was a part where you're supposed to be an announcer, which I really never was. And so my whole broadcasting career was shaped before I was 10. And it took me a while to realize it. It'd be one thing I said, yeah, I knew all along. No, it took me a little while to realize it was shaped before I was 10 from listening to Yankee baseball in a cheap $4.95 GE transistor radio that I keep under my pillow at night. That shaped my entire broadcasting career. Crazy, isn't it?
You know, it's so funny because we'll have to get Alan back on. But it's so funny because everything you're talking about is how I grew up in New York. And I'm just going to say this to you because you will love this. In 1963, I was a huge Sandy Koufax fan. I was a Yankees fan, but I was a huge Koufax fan. And in eighth grade, I had the transistor radio in my shirt with the earpiece up through my collar. And I was taking a math midterm. And when he struck out Harry Bright to break the World Series strikeout record, his 15th strikeout, I jumped up. And Mr. Craven, my math teacher, sent me to the principal. And when I met Koufax years later, I told him that story. And he said, if I had a nickel for every time I've heard where somebody was when I did that. Phil Rizzuto and Mel Allen, all those names you're mentioning, was how I grew up. And it's so great to hear you talk about this stuff, Alan. It's just fantastic.
And you know what? Getting sent to the principal for that was well worth it 100 times over.
I'm still talking about it. It's 200 years later, and I'm still talking about it.
Absolutely. Now, I wasn't as crazy as you in class. I never did that. So you got one for me. But I knew what you were talking about. That and they were staticky, those cheap little things you put in there that would hurt you. But you had to have it. I did do, but not in class. You
one up. Well. All right, we're out of time. We will get you back, and soon.
Yeah.
The book's available on Amazon. It's called Cut to the Chase, and as you can tell, there's nobody better than Alan Cutler at this. And hopefully we get to see you soon. Maybe you can come in and sit in the studio with us one day, and we'll do a whole hour of you telling stories.
Okay, and thank you for saying Amazon. That's what I was cutting you off. I just wanted to say one time. Thank you so much. God bless you all, and
all right.
Stay safe.
You too.
All right, cut.
Thanks. See ya. Wow.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
Well, when he's talking about that story about Cashman and the Yankees, it's not even in the top 50.
Yeah.
And he's not kidding. I brag about stuff. I don't know if you've noticed, you two.
You're humble.
But
humble.
I am. Thank you. I'm the most humble. My humility is the greatest humility.
It's oozing.
And I ooze humility?
Yeah.
You. Anyway, this book is fantastic. As I said, you can get it on Amazon. It's called Cut to the Chase, and it's really fantastic. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back.
Reds baseball.
Yeah, baby. I guaranteed it yesterday, as I've mentioned a bunch of times on this show.
Another one?
We're there.
Hey.
We're there. I mean, the Reds are there, baby. All right, ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5.
The Drive, brought to you by Dan Cummins in Paris and Georgetown.